Ding Consciousness Show, produced by Ever Beyond Radio and broadcast on Wolf Spirit Radio on the first and third Sundays of the month at 7 p.m. UK time. Simon actively encourages you to join the conversation by using the Ask Question menu link at the top of the page at wowwowwow.wolfspiritradio.com/listen. Please come early to ask your questions. Now, on with the show. The next 2 hours will be full of debate, interview guests and up-to-date news. Please join Simon in playing an active role. Connecting Consciousness Show. You're listening to Wolf Spirit Radio.
Yeah, yes you are, Wolf Spirit Radio. It is April the 2nd, 2017. And if you're listening to this on YouTube and it's not Studio 9 Jam, well, go and find Studio 9 Jam channel, and that's the official one. These are, you know, if you see little orange dots all the way along the bottom of the picture, it's what's called clickbait. They're just trying to grab your money by taking popular people and taking their stuff. Having said that, that's why I say the date and time, so that people know exactly what it is, because they've got the wrong date. Having said that, here is today's host, Simon Parks.
Hello, I thought I was the guest, not the host.
No, you're the host, I'm the producer.
Oh, you've been promoted overnight.
Yeah, well, I sort of demoted. but yeah, listen, this is your show.
Lovely to chat again with
yeah,
you.
Yeah, good afternoon, how are you?
Yeah, and it's really lovely to obviously have the audience and speak to them. Yeah, I think spring is coming. The weather's really improving. So anyway, that's my small talk. I'm not very good at small talk. Apparently that's why people like me.
That's good. No, I like people too.
I've got quite a lot to get through before we take the questions. Very serious stuff. So I want to move on to that straight away. We obviously here in Great Britain had a terror attack, as quite who orchestrated that or what its purpose was, that's not for debate now. But we had a terror attack. And there have been a number of people who have looked at the video footage that was taken immediately after the attack and have been able to take information from that, which would give them an indication of where the next attack was going to be scheduled. And they are coming out with something to do with the Statue of Liberty. Now, that means, of course, that everyone quite understandably would think of New York, the gateway, and think there's going to be an attack there. But it is not New York, and it's not America. Now, I have a problem. I have a problem because if I now say, because I know where this attack is going to take place, and I also know the date of the attack, if I do this, two things are going to happen. The first thing is that the attack won't take place. The way the evil Illuminati work, by hiding things in plain sight, that one of the reasons they have to do that is that if it's detected and it's put out there energetically, then it either puts it back or it scrubs it and they have to find another target. If people think back to the Terminator 2 movie, which I think was about 1991, and I had, in my early days on presentations, had shown the section where the bridge height was 9-11. So, you know, everybody thought that that meant that the bridge was 9 yards or 9 feet or whatever it was, stroke 11. And we all know, of course, now that that was Hollywood telling us that 9-11 was going to be something quite disastrous. Had somebody detected that, made a presentation or gone on a radio show, then they would have had to have put that back. The difficulty is that not so long ago, a commentator called Michael Shrimpton, who incidentally is sharing a platform, doing a conference in a couple of months' time down just north of London, sharing a platform with him as a speaker. He went public and said that there was going to be some form of terrorist attack at the Olympics, the London Olympics, which were in 2012. Because of that, he was taken to court and imprisoned. It wasn't a very long sentence, but he was imprisoned. So if I now give the name of this town or city and say there's going to be an attack, I face the possibility of going to prison. Excuse me. Now, people could say, well, you know, that's what you're here for, that, you know, to put out in the news and, you know, you could be a martyr. The problem I have with that is that if I do go to prison, I can't do any more warnings because I won't be able to talk to you. There'll be no more radio shows. There'll be no more conferences and I won't be able to pass on any more information. So I've got to be quite clever in the wording I use. I can't say to you that this town or that town, there's going to be a terror attack. Now I've got a conference next Saturday at High Elms, which is, just north of London. And I'm going to be going into this in a lot. In a great more detail, but what I will say to you is that we'll just change the subject now. We're going to talk about a completely different subject. I've got a friend who lives in Leicester, and I'm not going to go to Leicester on the 29th of April. Right, let's go on to something else now.
Moving swiftly on.
Yep, and I'll talk about finance now. Situation in America. We've been looking very carefully, and on my website I've been covering the situation on the Dow Jones stocks and shares. President Trump has decided to literally take the Fed on head on. What he wants to do is what we were talking about last year, which is basically to move to a silver dollar if possible. He wants to completely take away the power of the what we would call corporate America. I don't mean in terms of the corporations, but in terms of understanding America as a corporation rather than through the Constitution. And what Trump is doing is trying to put America back as the original founding fathers envisaged America to be, and not as it was hijacked fairly recently, actually, to become a huge corporate entity, which meant it owned the people. It owned the citizens of America, whereas under the original idea of the founding fathers, every man and woman and child was free. So what we're looking for here is a very important meeting which is coming up between America and China. I think China's distrust of Trump is less than its distrust of the Fed. So I'm looking, the key indicator here would be for China and America to agree to disagree, for them to say we can get along together, rather than China walking out of the meeting, which under normal circumstances it would do, because America is going to basically put a trade embargo on China and say that if you want to sell anything to us in America, we're going to hit you with goodness knows what taxes. But I think that the destruction of the Fed and the removal of the paper money, which is going to have a global effect positively, will be something that China will actually go behind. So watch for that one. It doesn't mean anything to people in Britain or Europe, but there's a guy in America called Tony Robbins, and somebody sent me a link on that. So thank you very much indeed, because I was going to talk about his book. He's not paying me to push his book, but his book is called The Crash is Coming. Now, it's on YouTube, and he was interviewed on Fox 5. So that's an established television. It's not an alternative true station. It's an establishment station. And he's basically interviewed. Yes, he's pushing his book, but his whole point is that there's a big crash coming. Now, if you think back just 6 months ago when I and a few others were talking about this crash, the establishment weren't touching it at all. But now the mainstream are touching it because they can't ignore what's coming. So it's important to understand that, you know, that the people in the alternative news, the true news, do lead the way, do trailblaze, and the establishment are dragged kicking and screaming behind, having to admit to it. All right, moving on quickly. still a great interest in Antarctica. And if you've got 5 minutes, then go and have a look, because a map in 1513 AD was drawn of Antarctica showing no ice. Now, it didn't mean in 1513 that there was no ice then, but it meant that somebody who drew the map in 1513 had access to ancient maps that were drawn before Antarctica was covered in ice, and that has to be something around 15,000 years ago. Now, our listeners will be really familiar with Admiral Byrd and the fact that he went off to Antarctica, and it was called Operation High Jump, 1946-1947. What many people don't really realise is that Admiral Byrd had flown over Antarctica in the 1920s twice and the 1930s twice. He was also a Freemason, and he was chosen to go there and have a look, and he also went with another guy called Admiral Forrestal. And Forrestal was actually chosen by the President to be the Secretary of Defense for the Navy. And Admiral Forrestal allegedly jumped out of a 16-story window hospital to his death. I believe he was thrown out because he was about to go public with what was in Antarctica right back in the late 40s. So we need to be watching this, and that's one of the reasons actually why the US Navy plays a key role in dealing with off-planet entities, and always has done. And you've only got to look at Star Trek, and of course, what do they call them? They call them ships. So the Navy's ships have always held an important point, and so the secret space program, the Navy has quite a strong say, although it's normally the Air Force that has the main lead on that. Okay, moving quickly on to the military situation. The Ukrainian government has nearly run out of money. You remember all the sort of pretend war that was going on there a year ago. And they're on the verge of asking Russia to admit them back. So the Ukraine government is on the verge of asking President Putin if, please, will he take them back? You can imagine the reaction with some of the people in the military over this side of the water. And as a result of that, there is currently a 40,000 troop exercise in Poland, American troops. Many more tanks than you would actually need, thousands of tanks and military vehicles. This is not to put pressure on President Putin. They wouldn't dare do that now. But this is to put pressure on the Ukraine government to try to force them not to go back to Russia. So there's a lot going on there. Keep your eye on that. The other thing is, interestingly enough, that we sometimes have questions about Lucifer and Satan. And I'm not the first person to bring this up, but I perhaps can add a little bit more to it. The satanic control network across the planet has been decapitated. Now, the satanic control element is actually artificial intelligence. It's basically a plasma field that exists around what we call the dark sun. Right back to Hitler and the Sumerian times, Babylonian times, the hidden sun or the dark sun is a binary sun. It's a sun that we don't see with our naked eye. But artificial intelligence has created a world or a life-giving environment around that. And it has been faced off by something else. Now, whether that something else is divine source or whether it's a more native, natural form of AI, I can't say at the moment, but there has been a standoff between the two, and the result has been that the next tier of Satanists down on the planet have no leadership, and they've gone into, not meltdown, but gone into panic, and that is why so many people around the globe are emailing me or texting me telling me that the number of chemtrails has gone through the roof. And I'd actually said last time round that we should expect that because they had the chance, the elite, the nasty elite had the chance to come over to the light. They chose not to. And they are so hell-bent now on not losing control, they've got no leadership, that they have just gone absolutely crazy with the chemtrailing. So please keep emailing me, and if your state or your county or your town has suddenly been absolutely inundated, and please take some photographs, because what they're now doing is hitting it with HAARP. So whereas before you would just get the chemtrails and the occasional harp. Now they seem to be absolutely exciting as many chemtrails as they possibly can. So keep your eye on that one, please. Edward Snowden. Remember Edward Snowden? He was a whistleblower, and he's now in hiding in Russia. Edward Snowden has recently released some information saying that ET is trying to contact the Earth. Now, of course, we all know that not only has ET contacted the Earth, but the elite are in communication with ET. What I think Edward Snowden is saying is that another group of very benign aliens are attempting to connect with Earth, and I can actually absolutely confirm that. And I would change the wording. What Edward Snowden is saying is ET is trying to contact the Earth, the people of the Earth. And I would change that to that they are in communication. So this is a uniquely new group. It's a very beneficial group who have always been there, but are in a direct communication, and they're not in communication with the military, and they're not in communication with the politicians. So that's an interesting one. I'm nearly finished. About 2 years ago, I went public and warned people how Samsung televisions, mobile phones, some of those models were listening in to people's conversations and passing that information on. About 3 weeks ago, 4 weeks ago, maybe 2 weeks ago, I can't remember now, not good with time on this planet, WikiLeaks released a whole tranche of information, and one of them was exactly what I, and I'm sure other people, had been saying, which is in relation to how some products from Samsung have been listening in. What was important was it made it onto mainstream news, and not just mainstream news, the front pages of some British major newspapers. This is unheard of. Establishment major newspapers carrying front page news from WikiLeaks. And it actually confirmed what I and others have said, that even when some of these model of Samsung televisions are turned off, they are still listening to your communications, your conversations, as are mobile phones. Now, why Ed Snowden was made the point was that it's not just that this information is being sold on to another party. You go to a store and you look at a new motor car, and you think, yeah, it's a nice car, and a salesman or woman comes out and talks to you, and you have a debate about it, and you go home, and an hour later you go on Facebook, and suddenly there's that model of that car, at an even cheaper price than what you were looking at. And obviously what's happened is that your communication or your conversation with your mobile phone in your pocket has picked that up and sold that information to a car dealership. That's capitalism. That's going to happen. But what Ed Snowden's talking about is the National Security Agency also taking everybody's conversation in front of a telephone when the phone is turned off, and in front of some models of these televisions when they're turned off. Now, why would an organization want to have all of our conversations when we're just discussing the price of chocolate, or, you know, the latest beer that's available? So I wanted to give everyone the news, and we'll just go back to the first one where we talked literally about the potential trouble in Britain. And I am going to discuss this a lot more at my conference. Now, I'm doing this conference on Saturday, but I won't be hanging about. so normally I hang around for a little bit, but I do have to get away very smartish. So I will do the presentation, and then I will just hang on for a few minutes. I won't be going to the evening meal, but if people are about and they can, you know, come, they'll grab me during the break times, the tea breaks, and I'll be happy to talk to you then. All right, JP, it was a very serious bit of information I had to give today.
Yeah.
So we will go on, I think.
But yeah, just going on from that, the last vignette you were talking about, the AI reading everything. Here's the thing: when people use voice recognition, what you have to understand, everybody, is that your voice is not interpreted on your phone. It's basically sent to Google. Google crunches it, transcribes it, and then sends you the text back. So obviously they have a copy of what you're reading. Now, if you combine that technology, therefore, with webbot technology. Do you know who Cliff High is, Simon?
Yes.
Yeah. So if you take Cliff High software and stick that on the back end of the phone reading software, you get a real-time view of the consciousness of humanity, whether they know something is going to happen or not. Now, that's an interesting... That would be a very interesting readout for the powers that be.
What's interesting is Cliff High hasn't been able to predict the next attack because it's not being written about, it's not being talked about, it's not appearing in any computers. So his software trawlering program isn't picking that up because the information in true Illuminati fashion is being hidden in each, after each terrorist attack, and whoever's behind it is not, we're not discussing that, but behind each terrorist attack, there are clues being left visually in the video. Now, Cliff High's software will not pick that up because it doesn't speak it, it's just visual. So that's why the Far Sight Institute would only pick that up if some of their psychics were going to remote view to the future, but from the electronic point of view, it doesn't pick it up. So I'm giving the heads up simply based on psychic people who have spoken to me and the information that's hidden in certain videos that were captured after the event. But as I say, at the conference, I'll be going into more detail. But do not anybody ask me outright where this town or city is that's going to be attacked because I'm not going to go to prison. Okay.
Interesting. But the thing is, you're not getting information from people who know that there's going to be a thing. You've got a general, you know, you've got various psychics who are giving you the same report, presumably. Or do you have insider information as well?
I've had from the psychics, what the psychics have done is give me the evidence that's hidden in the film footage. The insider, who I then spoke to after one of the psychics had contacted me, wasn't able to give me any evidence that's hidden in the footage, but was able to confirm the general location of the next attack and the date. So I have two separate sources confirming, but giving me a different rationale as to how they've achieved that answer.
Interesting. You know, when we first started talking, you described what the Mantids gave you as a portal. Do you still have that?
Yes, it doesn't go. I've had it ever since I can remember. And I will have it until this physical body dies.
All right. And so can you query that portal? And
can I send questions up the pipe, as the Americans would say? Yes, of course, I do all the time, yes.
So that would be another source of intel, for instance.
Yes.
Because they know stuff because, you know, flies on walls and things.
Well, they know stuff because they intercept all of the digital transmissions that go across. So the National Security Agency have some of the most wonderful liquid-cooled computers anywhere. But, you know, that off the planet, there are things that can eavesdrop onto them. So I'm very confident on the information that I've got. And the reason that I'm putting it out in the wording I'm putting it out in is so that I can't be in a court of law accused of, in the same way as they accused poor old Shrimpy, and sent him to jail, and he was a solicitor or a lawyer. So if he can't, you know, get out of court, get out of jail, who can?
But he is a member of the Law Society, so the only laws apply to him. So that's fascinating.
The point is that I have to get this information out because by getting it out, it will prevent it or push it back. And, you know, we've got to stop all these attacks. We've got to stop it. These are men, women and children being killed. You know, the attack in London, you know, that was real. People really died. It wasn't a holograph. It wasn't sort of cartoon. That was a real incident. People really died. The question is who was behind it. And we've got to stop these attacks. So by putting out the information I put out, it pulls a plug. And that's how the evil Illuminati work. They hide these things. If nobody picks it up, it can come to fruition. If somebody picks it up and puts it into the human consciousness, then that's lost and they have to push that away. So that's why I'm doing it. But I have to do it in a way that maintains my independence so that I can keep doing what I'm doing. And it's just about being very clever with words and, you know, just making sure that the truth gets out there in such a way.
Here's the thing, Simon. The May Day weekend has particular, things that happen. You know, the Illuminati do their thing on certain things, and May Day is one of them, isn't it?
Well, when I do the conference on Saturday, I will be going through all of those satanic dates, and I will show the crumb trail to show the evidence. Yes, you're right.
Yeah, see, this is a good preview. This is, where is it, by the way?
It's High Elms.
High Elms, where's that?
High Elms, I think it's High Wycombe, north of London. And if people just put in High Elms conference or High Elms alien or something like that, they'll find that on Google and there'll be a website there and people can book or just turn up on it. I think you can pay on the gate. I've spoken there before. This would be about the third or fourth time, so they must like me. Either that or I don't eat very much and they think he's quite cheap actually.
Yeah, you're probably a cheap date.
Yeah, exactly. Probably that.
Yeah. What do you like? I mean, I'll stop talking about this stuff. All right, look, unless it, you know, just comes to your mind, you know, what's your favorite conference food? Because, you know, it's a certain kind of, thing, isn't it?
Cheese. Yes.
Excellent. I put a question on the on Facebook the other day. What's the proper way to eat brie? I was really debating whether you cut the point and you start from the point and work backwards.
No. That's called nosing the cheese.
Nosing, you see, is that
upper middle? If you're an upper middle class or upper class company and you nose the cheese, then you've disgraced yourself. Right, questions.
Questions. All right, so here's this is a lovely question from Felicita. Okay, not Solicitor, but anyway, this is about golden rings. Dear Simon and JP, thank you for all you do. I look forward to your shows together more than any other. Dear Simon, I'm just making sure I'm recording it. Yeah. Dear Simon, in certain positive thought fields, teachings, they suggest we imagine a golden circle they call an empowerment circle. We are told to step into it before a speech or any time we need more power. You have spoken about how jinn are very attracted to circles. Would this imaginary circle also attract jinn or be an invitation to jinn? Also, there are bronze rings made by a man called Slim Sperling based on the cubic measurements of the King's Temple in Egypt. They're made to sit in while you meditate to raise your vibration. Would this also attract a jinn? Can our intentions deflect any invitation? Thank you very much for who you are and all you do. Much love. Felicita. So, do you want me to break that down?
No, I think I got it.
Slim Sperling, yeah.
Right. No is the answer. If you sat within a pentagram, then you probably would activate the attention of a jinn. Goodness knows what else. For meditation, if you can create a proper sacred geometry pyramid and sit within a pyramid, then you will be able to meditate and draw in energy from source. That would be the best way to do it. Metal rings. Metal is important in terms of defeating jinn. Certain mantras or texts tend to be written on copper discs or brass discs, but copper is probably the best. This is one way that an imam or others can try to fend off a jinn. I don't use that because they are going down the read 10,000. I'm not being rude. There's 10,000 texts to do one of these things that an imam would do. It's a huge amount of work. And they are basically incanting magic to fight off a jinn. I don't fight them off like that. Mine's a lot quicker. So the metal circle, no, it wouldn't draw anybody to you. But if you're psychic and you astral project or you send your intent out, that will trip lots of alarm bells or trip alarm wires, and then you'll get interest. You're much more likely to get off-planet interest first and foremost. So probably the bad guys will come and visit you to see who you are. You're not on their books. How is it that you've come here and you're visiting this, that, and the other? You will open a portal if you are psychic and you go onto a Ouija board and you use a Ouija board, then you will open a portal and that will bring a djinn to you regardless of whether you're sitting in a bronze ring or not. So, you know, please, please, please don't touch a Ouija board. That's a good question. Hope that helps.
Very good question. Now, I just want to ask about the, do you know about it's twisted copper wire? And I've made a few things out of this stuff as well. By the man called Slim Sperling. Have you heard of his stuff?
No, I haven't.
All right. It's an orgon thing.
Oh, okay. That's good.
And, basically you take a piece of, household copper wire, you strip it down, and then use electric drill to twist it together. And then bend that now quite hard copper, and you solder the ends together, and it creates an orgon flow that keeps going.
So it would have to be clockwise then?
Yeah.
Yes, it would have to be to make the orgon flow work. Yes, I see how that would work. And then you'd have to have a crystal to excite it at some point?
You can basically put that together.
Yes.
And what I've done is I've made some 3-inch ones. And then I soldered 4 of them together on 4 different planes to make a tetrahedral relationship between each of the rings, and that produces what's called a Genesa crystal.
Okay, yeah, got you.
I've played a few years ago.
That would work. Yeah. Yes, that would work.
And that sends out a beam in all directions. Now, pyramids. Do you recommend people sleeping under pyramids?
Yes, I do. I do. I recommend. If I was president or prime minister, I would pay for everybody to have their own pyramid for them and their children to have in their house to do 10 minutes each day, because it is so beneficial, so beneficial.
I'm thinking about doing a webinar or something like that on how to build your own pyramid, because
very good.
It's something I did years ago. And I don't fancy, you know, posting 8 pieces of copper when people can do it themselves, you know.
I mean, the thing is that what you can do is probably sort of authorize it or stamp it or something, because if you're going to give, you've got to give absolutely accurate measurements for it to work.
Oh yeah.
So you could oversee that. But I absolutely know the benefit of that. There was a study. It's always, these studies are always done in Russia. There was a study done, and they actually put a group of prisoners, convicts, into a pyramid. These one of these model pyramids over a period of time, and then the reoffending rate from this group was the lowest of any group ever. So they did a control group that never went to the pyramid and what, et cetera, et cetera. But the group, I've got the statistics and I haven't got them to hand, but I know that the reoffending rate was incredibly low.
But there's more.
Yeah.
There's more, because not only did the guys who were in the pyramid, get better, as it were, get less evil, but they put some material like a breeze block, you know, ash blocks.
And they
put those in the pyramid, and then they made cells out of that stuff, and the guys who were in the cells made of the stuff that was held in the pyramid, they got better too.
Now, see, I didn't know. I haven't heard that. The report I got was from a Russian, not an ambassador, but someone around the ambassador. He gave me that report, but I hadn't heard about the blocks they used to build a prison. That's very interesting.
Indeed, yeah. I've been studying. You know, I eat anything pyramid related. So
excellent. Right, sir.
So meanwhile. From happy little pyramids to repeating dreams full of emotional torture. This is from Barbara. I enjoy the show every Sunday, and thank you for doing this. My question, have you ever heard of dreams where people have the same emotional dream again and again several times in the same night? It's just like a test. I'm in a very emotional situation full of grief and despair. Then I'm taken out into a white room and somebody behind me asks me if I'm satisfied with my reaction or if I want to repeat it to make it better. Then it starts again. Normally, I would say it is my subconscious mind or soul that wants to train me to keep me in emotional peace. But on these days, I need half the day to get rid of the despair I awake with. Have any idea?
Yes. It's basically, you're trying to learn. You're being offered or given a task or a test. You're being shown something and you are being asked each time, do you think that you're... reaction was correct? Do you think that you handled it correctly? Would you like to redo it? Now, if you're having the dream again and again, then on a very high level, what you're saying is, I didn't get that right. Can I have another go at it, please? And the despair you're feeling is because you're not doing what's required. You're not getting that right answer. So somebody really cares about you. This is not negative. Somebody really cares about you to try to speed you up, speed your development up on a etheric level, on an energy level. And they're basically putting a scenario to you and your reaction to that and then saying to you, do you think you could better it? Or what did you learn from this? And if you're getting that dream again and again, it's because you haven't quite reached the pinnacle. You haven't got to the top of the mountain. And when you do, you won't get that dream again. Don't look on it as negative. Don't look on it as something to be awful. Look on it as something that you are going to get right. So that's very good news. Someone really cares about you. Thank you.
Well, good. So it's not that bad. It's not a bad dream. There we go. Okay. Right. Do you believe there was a transition of souls between two Earths based on our original frequency? Sorry, I'll say that again. Between two Earths based on our individual frequency. And when did this shift happen? Is there any relation to what some people are calling the Mandela effect? There's more questions. I'll ask those. So,
right.
Transitions of souls to other planets or other dimensions or something.
Right, not transition of soul, but a transition of consciousness. There is a difference. The intent to survive with humans is incredibly strong. Well, it is with reptilians, but it's incredibly strong with humans in a loving creational way. Reptilians just want to survive, full stop. But humans want to procreate, they want to create life, and they want to connect with source. So it's a different sort of wanting to survive. And what human consciousness can do is reach out and hook on, and I mean that in a positive way, to other tram cars that are going by and start to replicate what has been created here, but it will never be exactly the same because that tram car is somewhat different. Now, somebody was talking to me, and I can't remember for the heck who it was, but somebody had said that their member of their family had shown them a photograph taken many years ago out of their kitchen window, and it had shown what they thought was like the face of Jesus in the snow or something like that. And then this person, 20, 30 years later, bumped into somebody else, and they were talking about strange phenomena. And this other guy went and got a photograph, and lo and behold, it was the same photograph. Well, it wasn't the same photograph. It was a photograph taken from the same position, out of that kitchen window, looking at the same thing. Now, he said, I couldn't understand how that was possible, that there could be two photographs absolutely identical, taken at many, many years distance. And what happens is that consciousness is always is a stream. It can bifurcate, split. It can go its own way. And then it, like railway lines or railroad lines, it can rejoin at the points, comes away at the points, runs on two separate tracks, and then comes back at the points. Well, whilst it's split, the right hand will replicate what the left hand and vice versa. So this is what people call the Mandela effect, but it's not a movement of souls from one place to another. It is the movement of intent, thought, and consciousness. That's a very good question.
Okay, right. So, talking of soul splits, this question is from Maxwell. Now, Maxwell, all right. Freddie Mercury of the band Queen, in the song Princes of the Universe, sings about the reptilian sword ritual Simon had talked about as an initiation ceremony. Is it possible another third of Simon's Hollow Earth human soul was split with Freddie Mercury's? Thanks for all the hard work, JP and Simon.
I don't think so, because some people say that Freddie Mercury can't sing. I think he can sing, but my goodness me, you haven't heard me. No, I think if I'd had any connection with him, I'd probably be, I'd be very wealthy. No disrespect to Freddie, he deserves it because I think he's worked damn hard. And I would probably have a better voice. No, but many people who are in the music industry are come into contact with a whole range of people. Not least, some of them are good and some of them are not so good. And they can pick up information which you wouldn't pick up in the public library. Also, people who mix in high end, and I would say he did mix in the high end, will unfortunately come across demonic type stuff. And clearly will perhaps have had experiences of reptilian stuff, for all we know. He may have had experiences as a boy. I met somebody not very far away from where I live who'd had a very similar experience to me with the sword, except he failed his test. He was about the same age as me, and we were talking generally. We discovered that, you know, we had similar experiences. And I said to him, did you have the sword test? And he said, I won't mention his name because I don't have his permission to speak about him. And he said, oh yes, I did the sword test, but I failed it. And he said, the shame. And he said, that was me, finished, out of the program. They weren't going to work with me anymore. The shame, the absolute disaster, because I dropped the sword. He dropped the sword. Basically, what happens is that you are given a 3-foot, 1-meter blade, and you have it point down on the ground, and then you, it's double-handed. You have two hands on the handle, and then you've got to flip it up in the air so it spins head over heels in the air. Maybe it turns about 4 or 5, depends how high you throw it, but 4 or 5 times. And obviously it's going to drop. Now, what's unnerving is if it's dropping point end. If it's dropping point end, you've got a problem. If it's dropping handle end, it's easier. But if you step away from it, you failed. If you attempt to catch it and you don't catch it, you fail. But if you catch it by the hilt, it must be by the handle, then you've passed the test. Now, he dropped it. Now, the very fact that he could tell me that, that doesn't appear in, as far as I know, it doesn't appear in any books. It doesn't appear on any YouTube videos. You'd have to live it to know it. You would have to have done that. And the fact that we could both stand there and absolutely confirm each other's stories, you know, it was very insightful. But you don't have to share someone's soul to do that. If a reptilian group takes an interest in you, and then they will test you as a child, and you could have a very different soul. You don't have to share a soul. I didn't have any connection with this guy at all. So no, but many people have actually had the sword test, and it may cause people to write in now and say they've done it as well.
Fascinating. So perhaps many people have a memory like a dream, because like a lot of people don't. 3 years old. Yeah, a lot of people.
Oh, I'm losing you. I can't hear you.
Really? Hello, hello, hello.
I'm losing you.
Yeah, losing me. Let me just.
Someone didn't like the sauce.
All right. Yeah. Being hit. Oh. It's being recorded.
Are you under attack there?
There's something going on. Yeah, a little bit of, DDoS going on. Yeah.
That's a sword story. Didn't like it.
Didn't like the sword story. Oh well, there you go.
No.
Oh, wonderful. Anyway, let's wait a moment before the thing settles down again. It'll come back in a second. It's just one of my servers being under attack. and probably a little bit of mine. Yeah. So, yeah, we're going to retry now. There, I'll shoot be back on... No? Oh. Now, I'm just going to bring Stream 2 back in. Oh, no, there we go. Stream 2's back in. Simon, you still with us?
Yes, I'm still here.
Marvellous. Right, okay. We've weathered that little storm. Thank you very much.
I'll tell you what I like about it is that it's confirmation.
Yeah.
You know, you couldn't make it up.
No.
We talk about what's obviously, it's not, I said it's not in a book. This doesn't appear in a book. It doesn't appear to my knowledge, on any videos. This is sacred knowledge, not sacred in terms of good stuff, but just sacred in terms of their initiation programs, their ritual programs. And when, you know, I or anyone else, I suppose, goes public with these things, for them, it's an offense. It's absolutely an offense. It would be like someone going into a holy temple and desecrating it.
Yeah.
So it's not surprising then that there is some form of comment made, and that was very interesting.
Interesting. Okay. Now, so. Oh, fascinating. Oh, brilliant. Excellent questions. All right. So, dear Simon and JP, this is from somewhere Central Australia. I was from CC Central Australia. Does the reptilian star race lay eggs? How do they bring forth life? What is the social role of females in the race? Thanks a lot, and lots of love. Hazelnut. Thank you.
That's a nice name.
Yeah.
Taking it backwards, the key there is social. They wanted to know what their social role was. Is that right?
Well,
the social role, is that what they're asking?
Well, the social role of females, but also, you know, mainly do they lay eggs?
Oh, I can answer that one, but yeah. It's just that,
and what is the social role of females in the race?
Right, okay, because that precludes anything military, because I'm going to answer the question exactly as I'm asked it. I'm very literal like that. The social role is to stand 3 feet behind the male. Not to speak unless spoken to, and to attend all of the ceremonies where she is required to attend. However, when the door closes and the audience go home, she's very much in charge, and she will bend the ear, very British thing that, bend the ear of the reptilian lord to get him to change policy or to favour this courtier or to favour that or to do this or to do that. Now, so he is the figurehead, he is the power, he is the front man, but behind the scenes that she socially wields a great deal of power, and she has her own court, just as in England it developed, but it particularly like Byzantine. Now, there's a wonderful mosaic in a little church in Italy, and it's wonderful because it shows Justinian, the Eastern Roman Empire, and it shows his queen next to him, and whatever he's got in terms of civilian advisors, civil service advisors, military advisors, and people who look after the household, she's got, but she's got less of it. So standing with the Queen is a top-ranking civil servant, a top-ranking government advisor, and he's got an assistant, so like a personal secretary. And then she's got, the Queen's got next to her, the lady-in-waiting, who does all her clothes and her jewellery and advises. And then she's actually got a general. She has a general. The women, people don't understand this, that in the Eastern Roman Empire, not in the Western Roman Empire, but in the Eastern Roman Empire, in the Constantinople, the queens had their generals who would advise them. So the emperor would get a general advising him, and then I presume the king and the queen would then discuss, and they would have different opinions. And that's exactly modelled on this. In the reptilian court, there is a completely different lifestyle, a different court, a different ruling, but when the two king and queen are together, they present as one, but they each have their own individual advisors. Right, the next question was about eggs. Originally, yes, they did. Originally, they did. The original reptile race did not go about on two legs. It went on four legs. And remember Ender's Game? I've talked about Ender's Game, and people did go and watch it. I think lots of people watched it. At the very end of the film, he, the hero of our story, is taking an egg to try and hatch it on another planet to give life. And this is a little nod to the fact that the original queens, the original reptilian queens, did lay eggs. That is not the case now. So some good questions. Thank you.
Well, interesting, interesting, interesting. So, this is about Star Family from Lima. How can someone say that they're from a certain star family, since our soul is eternal? Haven't we been part of many different star families? A big thank you from Lynn in Norway.
Well, do they mean somebody meaning me? How can I say? I think that's
people are talking, you know, oh, I'm Arcturian, I'm, you know, Pleiadian, I'm this or that, you know.
Well, it's very fashionable for everyone to be Palladian.
That's right, yeah, but you have no idea what it means to be Palladian. Anyway, go on.
It's like when I do a reading, you know, I will not say what the person wants to hear. I will tell the truth. You know, so many people want to have been a high priest or a priestess at Atlantis and tended the crystals. And when I don't say that, they get very upset, but I'm not going to make things up just to make people feel good. Look, if we are all created by Source, and we are, then we are given a choice. Now, wherever we go, that is the star family of choice. But if we hang about there kicking our heels for a few million years, and we go and come somewhere else, and we enjoy where we go, we begin to incarnate in the bodies of that vibrational field. So in other words, if you come down from the eighth or the ninth dimension and you reincarnate in the sixth or the fifth dimension, over a period of time you take on board the signature of that environment. And it means that when I or anyone else who's got that skill or gift can look at that person, you will see the core element, which is the first choice, but then this coating, for want of a better word, or depending on how integrated that person is into that culture. And if you do three or four of these, then you can have three or four of those. That's how you can have a soul that's not just one type. But it's natural. You don't look at a soul and say, well, the top bit is Palladian and the bottom bit is reptilian and this little bit on the left. It doesn't work like that. It works together. It's all one, but it's the percentage, the amount, depending on how long you were there, how much you believed that was your new home. You know, if you kicked out a Lyra because you wanted them to do things, and the Lyrans are pretty laid back actually, and you said, I want to do this, and no, we'll, you know, give us 1,000 years and we'll think about it. So people left there and they went to the Pleiades, which is, you know, sort of use an American term, a kick-ass place. Well, you know, you might begin to take on in this lifetime Palladian features physically. So someone could read you and say, oh yes, you're Palladian. But if you look deeply, you would actually see where you originated from. So I hope that answers the question. It's a good question and it's very complicated.
Yeah. And like when you say, all right, I look at you and I see that you're Lyran, or I look at you and I see that, how do you know? How do you perceive it? Do you have like a control panel? Are there facial features that show you the color of the eyes, things like that?
No, I think you've been sitting in front of a screen too long. I don't have a control panel. What I do is I read the energy frequency of the soul of that individual. Now, it's much easier if the person is awake. If I can look in that person's eye, I can see who they really are. But if I can't do that because the person, isn't fully awake, then I will look at the soul of that person through the frequency of the body. And there's absolute traits. And there's a physical trait. So a set person from a set dimension will create a physical body. And I don't go for what the doctors say. You know, yes, if you have a biological mother and father, your body will obviously follow the genetics given. But the soul is demanding and saying, you should be like this. You know, you should be like this. And the soul will attempt within the parameters of that energy. It will attempt to physically make the body more representative of its...
Yeah, so it terraforms the body.
As best it can. It can only move within a certain parameter because there's earthly genetics, but it will have a say on that. But that only gives a physical understanding. It's the energy part of the soul. Because remember, many people hide who they are for very good reasons. We're dangerously getting close to talking about Charles Darwin, and I don't want to do that with 5 minutes before tea.
Yeah, I need to go and make some more tea. I've enjoyed a nice coffee in the last hour. That gets me going because I've got, like, this is hour one of my 8-hour marathon on a Sunday. So, that's fabulous, information there, Simon. So here's, no, I'm not going to say. yeah, we could translate to Mutt's Nuts is another way of putting it. Anyway, is asking truth, gold and silver. What is the real reason for our elite's fascination with gold? Is it truly just monetary? Also, can we protect ourselves with silver in any other way than just money? I've read somewhere that both of these metals have other significant uses for things such as life longevity and disease control. Is there something extraterrestrial going on here? Very good questions. Brilliant questions.
Okay. It's not actually extraterrestrial that's going on. It's just natural. But the extraterrestrials or the extra dimensionals obviously have had a lot longer to think about things than we have. And so they've understood certain things that we're still working towards understanding. You talk about monatomic gold. First of all, that sort of gold can be used to increase the lifespan of certain biological entities. It can also spray it into the atmosphere. The more interesting part of the question here is the silver, because that's something that's been in very rarefied circles has been debated. One of the importance of silvers is it can be used in medical purposes, but not medical purposes that are currently available on the planet. There are off-planet and elite people who know that a pure silver can cure certain diseases when used with certain machines. And I'm hoping that when some of this technology comes out of Antarctica, we might begin to see a very big leap in medical science based around silver. So I don't believe it's coincidence that the person has asked questions about gold and silver in that way. I think the person might have a knowledge as well. So I'm looking to the next 9 months to see if we get something out regarding silver. Certainly gold has a long history, but remember that gold has a spell on it, stronger spell than silver does. Gold has a spell on it, which makes it addictive to people. Addictive, and that's one of the things we've got to break, actually. Now it's tea time, isn't it?
Yes, it is. Now, as you're just talking to about gold, I was thinking, yes, if I could only get my mouse onto the right screen.
when we come back, when we come back after our little break, I'm going to read out my list to thank people who very kindly donated, so don't let people think I've forgotten.
Okay, so let's see. Yes, it is. Actually, it's working. Hang on a second. Let me just press this button here. And this slider here. There we go. Gold by Spandau Ballet, a good old London band. I think their bass player went to my school or something down in East London. So, are you back, Simon? Or am I talking to thin air so far? So I'd like to thank everybody for coming along to Wolf Spirit Radio and to Studio 9 Jam on YouTube. We're currently, we've got several playlists. If you're interested in the Andronicus Transmissions playlist, We also have Dr. Sam Muggsy electronically dissecting me using her Skio Hi-Fi Science advanced technology machine, which kind of sees inside me and can detect all kinds of things by vibration. Very amazing. So there's that, and there's I have a playlist about Lyra, and I also have a playlist with Alex Collier, and also several of my favorite shows, the shows that I've really enjoyed doing, I put up on YouTube, on Ever Beyond. And are you back yet, Simon? Nope. So, again, we've got more. After this show, I'm inviting calls in to bring ourselves together and talk to each other about what Simon has been saying. And the show called Simon Says, Roundtable style. So it used to be, so if anybody who's been taking notes, would like to join the call, even if they just want to kind of read what they say, or, but, definitely, value all of your opinion. So, are you back yet, Simon? No? Oh, well. I wonder where you got. Let me just check. There's no one. No messages. Right, okay. So, this is fun. yeah, so if you want to ask a question, maybe it's a bit late. I mean, because I'm just going through these questions, and they were asked about 3 hours ago. Maybe I'll to catch up with some of the, yeah, I'll reload this page and see where we get to. And we'll, yeah, I'll start with some, yeah, these have just been coming on, so.
Hello, JP.
Yeah, there you are. All right, good. I've made a couple of announcements while you were there, because the Spandau Ballet was like typical 80s pop song, you know, 2 minutes, 30 seconds, and boom, it's out. So
the last one hadn't played on for 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, it's all random and spontaneous and all that stuff. But so how do you manage to talk and type when on air? Here's the thing. There is a 2-minute delay between what we say and what you hear. This is called the dump buffer, which means that you get a good, nice, smooth connection when it's working. otherwise, it, you know, it could loop for about 2 minutes. So that's the whole thing. So if you hear me talking and then you see me typing, it's because I was talking 2 minutes ago, somebody else is talking, and now I'm typing. So that's how it works, folks. Again, let's go back to the questions. Hi, Simon and JP. This is from Joel Nicolo. Could you please elaborate on what you meant about the chakras being part of a control system? Millions of healers and yogis use it as raising consciousness. Are we being duped again? Thank you for your presence on this earth. Thank you both for the show. Gratefully, Joel.
No, it's not. You're not being duped. You can raise your consciousness, and you can develop by activating the chakras. The point is that anything that's hierarchical. And the chakras are hierarchical because we give them color codes, and we start at the lower level, and then we go up to the pineal gland, which we think is the top one. Anything that's hierarchical and in the body can be used, and they're stations, and they can be attacked. But you can use them to gain elevation. You can use them to gain your consciousness. All I've said is that because they are in a linear position in the human body, you have to be careful because the individual chakra points can be attacked. But you know, you can use it. Think about the Kundalini. You are activating your chakras as well and bringing up the power through them. You know, boom, 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 as it rises up through. So no, it's not. It's a bad thing. It's that you just have to be careful because it is an entry point for something that's evil that wishes to attack. So no, it doesn't mean that all the yogis and et cetera have got it wrong. No, they're right. But you have to raise your consciousness to the level that you cannot be attacked. And I'll just quickly talk about, you talk about the buffer. Of course, the NSA during the moonshots had a buffer so that if one of the astronauts reported seeing something, they had enough time to take out that conversation, to blank it out. I can't remember what the time, it wasn't 2 minutes, it was much less than that. But if somebody reported seeing an alien spacecraft, or something happened that wasn't expected, the NSA had the ability to cut that so that nobody on Earth heard about it. Now, quickly now, I just want to thank people. I want to thank Louis for, you know, donating. R. Charles, Joanne, Khalil, Mia, Lo, Joseph, Tom, David, Donna, Mohammed, Simone, Maureen, Bithri, Kyrgyzstan, Alan, Dante, Shari, Wister, George. Now, people say, oh, maybe you only thank people who give you, you know, quite a bit of money. No, I don't. Lara gave me 19p. Thank you, Lara. 19p helped.
I think that's one of the daughters of one of the listeners.
I don't give names, second names. Wouldn't do that to anybody.
No. It's really lovely that Lara listens and wants to give. I think that's lovely.
It's just I wanted to make the point that if someone sends me £10 or £20, I don't just thank them. It's someone who sent me 19p. It helps. It'll go towards a stamp. Stephen, Ram, Deborah, Charlene, Yuhua, Bonnie, Joanne, nearly finished, James, and Michael. Michael, I did want to get that Skype with you, but you can see from my update of the news, there's a lot been going on, and I will catch up with you as soon as I can. And thank you, Michael, for your donation. So thanks to everybody for keeping Simon free, keeping me able to do what I do. And thank you for supporting JP and the radio station and other things I'm sure you support. And thank you for being you and basically resisting the system. Great. Let's get on. Thank you.
Fab. Thank you very much. And, thank you. Thank everybody, also who, donates, during this show to, Wolf Spirit Radio. I don't know what to do really. Maybe we should publish a newsletter and say thank you, or I'll do like you do and talk. Anyway, meanwhile, all right, okay, greetings from America, Simon. I have a long scar behind my right eye. The doctor told me two different times when my eyes were dilated. I remember having an eye patch over one eye. My parents took me to the hospital because I had a red eye in the morning when I was six, but no one knew my eye was cut. I had extensive bruising when I was growing up. Never knew the cause. I'm definitely in the royal bloodline by 7 years of genealogy research. I also can't really move anymore. Tons of tests, everything came out clear, I believe I kind of had too much stress to keep moving. I'm very psychic, very happy, and very connected to everything that's going on. I'm using voice recognition. I feel like I need to concentrate on what's happening right now in order to possibly walk again. Please help.
Well, I will do. If I can, you need to email in so that we can have a Skype chat. You've obviously said things there like bloodline, psychic. The eye business is not unique, but it's very rare. Come across that before. I'd have to have a fuller understanding of exactly, what sort of damage it was and what shape the damage was in, how old you were. Sometimes people with a lot of experience, talking off-planet aliens, can foresee the future and will take steps to increase a person's psychic ability. If they're going to be closed down in one field, they'll expand it in another. For instance, a blind woman would probably have absolutely superb hearing. And so one sense can compensate for another. But It's well known that if you are wanting to increase somebody's psychic ability, then you reduce their vision, their capability of seeing. So I think the best thing would be, if possible, to see if we could have a chat. That's an interesting case. Thank you.
Excellent. Okay, so here's, that's when we want it darker, from Grizzel. Shadow beings. Every time I get close to asking this question, physically I get really shaky and anxious. Deep breath, everybody, in through the nose. When I was 3, I dreamed a black hand tried to pull me off the bed. My dad remembers me crying and yelling for him. That's when he saw I was almost falling off the bed, and he pulled me back on. I'm in my early 40s now, and I still remember. Could that incident be related to shadow beings? My dad shared with me that he would see a lady in blue sometimes. Thank you so much, Simon. I love you so much for everything, and I hope to one day meet with you. Thank you, Simon and JP.
Well, if you're in Britain, that's possible. If you're in another country, it is possible if you're prepared to fly. Unfortunately, I don't fly, but if you come to Britain for business or to meet family or friends, then, you know, message me and I will. I'm happy to meet people. Don't have a problem with it. I think it's nice to communicate with people, not one of these people that hides themselves away too much. Right, that's an interesting point you've got there. You see, it could either be, it's not a djinn, that's not a djinn doing that. It's either the shadow being or it's a reptilian not yet into this reality. It's a black hand, which doesn't necessarily mean it's a shadow being. I'd need to know how many fingers on the hand, if possible, and what you can remember about that. Whether when the hand held you, you got a cold feeling, or whether you didn't have a feeling at all. These are the sort of questions that I would have to ask, and how the hand appeared. My sort of experience would tell me that we're looking at a reptilian, not a shadow being. Now, shadow beings are soul fragments of a long-distant reptilian race, energetically projecting. It's very complicated because they're not beings in their own right, in the sense that they're a race as such. They are offshoots, fragments from a race that are etherically trapped and can be manipulated. And so therefore, they exist much more in the energy state than they do in the physical state. But some of them nevertheless can actually come through into the physical form. And remember that jinn can take the shape of, well, nearly anything. They can take the shape of a reptilian, and you think you're dealing with a reptilian, but it's a jinn. However, the grabbing of you and pulling you over the side of the bed is not something the jinn would normally do, but it is something the reptilians would do. It's akin to many people report being shoved in the back or tripped up. Jinn can do that, and shadow beings can do that, but it's much more the preserve of a reptilian. So, you need to have a chat with me, I think. I need to ask you questions. I need to learn more about what happened and what you can remember. And often when people talk to me, they think they only remember a certain amount, but when I start talking to people, hey, stuff comes back that they thought they'd forgotten forever. And so I can build up a picture with them. And I think this would be an interesting case. Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Now, this is a question about your family. Are you okay to talk about that? This is about your James Marsland.
Yeah, I don't mind. I'll talk about it.
Okay. So your maternal grandfather, James Marsland, born 1895 in relative poverty, became an occultist in the world of global trade, missions and diplomacy. Number one, is his name, James Marsland, important or bloodline vibration?
Oh, it's very important. You know, why would you have a name
Marsland?
The link, of course, you have to jump ahead a little bit. My biological father was from a place that used to be called Persia. I am answering the question, but we have to do this to answer the question. My biological father was a place called Persia and is now called Iran. In fact, my biological father was born in a village right on the boundary between what was then Persia, Iran and Armenia. And in actual fact, it used to change hands. So there would be a sort of a a local war, and then the boundary would be pushed forward a quarter of a mile or something, and then 20 years later it would be pushed back. So this particular village, and I don't know the name of it, could either be claimed by other country. Now, in a Persian dialect, there is a offshoot which associates the Mars land with the word snake. And it was always sold. My grandfather would tell his fellow diplomats, so that because they would be somewhat interested by it, he would say, oh, it comes from the word marsh, as in those that lived by the marsh. You know, we lived by the marsh, and so we were called marshlanders, and that's just been corrupted to Marslanders. But what he said to me privately was it had everything to do with the red planet. So there's your answer.
Fascinating. So, now, doesn't stop there. Okay. Your grandfather was one of a few people to decide that Edward the
Eighth
abdicate. Sorry, it's not my Rome. My Roman's a bit rusty. Abdicate in 1936. It's been 2,000 years. That event seems the same kind of situation in the lack of a male reptilian energy signature, where the elite do not want Prince Charles to be king. You spoke of.
Yep.
Is that
okay? I don't understand the question.
Oh, I think what he's saying that,
it sounded like a statement rather than a question.
Yeah, I know.
Okay, make a question.
Passively a question, but basically he's saying in the way that your grandfather decided that Edward VIII was not suitable because he was too effeminate in some way, are they saying that Charles doesn't have that kinglyshipness that is the signature of the bloodline that is eligible to be king? Is that, you know, so to sum it, he says, how are rulers ceremonially and ritually created, and what bloodline is on the throne right now?
Okay, right. Well, first of all, King Edward VIII was got rid of not because he was too effeminate, but because he was on the verge of being blackmailed by Adolf Hitler. And Wallace Simpson was a full-blooded Nazi spy who was accessing very high-level documents via King Edward VIII. And what was a very sort of early fledgling MI5, MI6, who were tipped off by a special branch, actually. And it was special branch that notified the fledgling intelligence services in Great Britain that there was a Nazi ring through von Ribbentrop, who actually originally was a champagne salesman. But we get off the story here. So basically, I am answering the question. The powers that be didn't feel strong enough to depose a king on their own. So they contacted 12 good men and true, remember, it's very patriarchal, 12 good men and true, which they created as a sort of a Freemasonry, Illuminati, a jury. I don't know which one of them was the judge. I never found that out. But created a jury, and my grandfather was one of the jury members who then voted whether he stayed or went. The questioner is absolutely right. The same thing is going to occur again when the reigning Queen of England dies, because there is a very strong force that does not want Charles to be king, because of his bloodline. It's not, that bloodline is not what we are told. But under English law, it only happens if the king abdicates. Now, if Charles says, actually, I rather like fancy being a king, he is going to be king. Just as Edward VIII was, and Edward VIII had to sign an abdication document. So, if Charles doesn't abdicate officially soon, he will be king. And there will be a lot of problems, because one half won't want him and the other half will. But, you know, I can equate to that.
So, now, let's say dreams. Dreams within two realities. Oh, sorry. By the way, that was from Sheena in Nîmes in France. Okay. So, we're extending our reach down there. Yeah, Brie, yeah. Anyway, topics, dreams within two realities. Hi, Simon. I have been having vivid and wild dreams recently of situations that have not come into being, yet I've been sensing that I'm on the path of following that dream. I also wake up in the middle of speaking in my sleep. Some of my dreams have come into being, and these ones are ones that I feel physically. Is my soul being pulled back and forth between realities? Is it possible I'm changing my own life path through dreams?
I can't answer that the way you'd like me to, because there wasn't enough information in that. It sounds to me much more likely that you are leaving your body and you are experimenting, or you're looking at timelines. You're looking at what potential futures are. There isn't a computer on the planet that can do what humans do. Computers, you talked about Cliff High. Computers can predict, but they can't actually see the future. Even AI can't, and AI's lost its short-term ability. It's very recently lost its short-term ability to divine the future. But humans, because of the connection to Source, the 12 strands of DNA, the Kundalini, have the ability, with some staggeringly accurate results, to foretell the future, see the future. So it may well be that you are on the verge of, you know, doing that. Now, I suggest you write your dreams down. I think it's very important. You write them down. Don't buy a dream book. I'm sorry, the dream book won't really assist you, not in the level that you're at here. But I think what you've got is a situation where you are looking at the future. What you've got to do, although you won't remember it, you have got to say to yourself in the waking time, I want to ask questions. I want to know. So that when you are in that level state, you can start to be aware of what you're looking at in terms of time frames. Is it 1 month ahead, 6 months ahead? Is it a year? Where is this taking place? Is it even taking place on this planet? Are you looking at another situation, another dimension? So you need information, because you are trying to decode what is most likely a higher dimensional message. You're trying to decode it in a third dimensional way, and that's just not, you just can't do that. So I suggest you write it down and then drop me a line and then let's have a chat about it. But try and write down these dreams so that we've got something to work on. That would be quite exciting for me. Okay.
Good. Having something to work on. Bit to chew on. So, Earth Crusade 2012 is saying, first of all, I honor and thank you for the enlightening work you do. I have learned so much. I absolutely enjoy your voices, Simon and Jay, so much. The genuine clarity resounds so welcoming to my ears. My question is, regarding karma in the equation, who or how is it determined for the incarnating soul which race, gender, parents, and time of death is chosen before re-entry into another body? Who makes that call? I have been told of contracts, our parents, and time of death before we enter back. And so how and when is the next lifetime determined or decided? Is it before the freeze box? And how is it that you have the ability to return, one has it here, with all your memories? How do you escape the freeze box?
I can't. What's the first question again?
So who makes the call in, you know, in terms of who you are, your genetics, your time and date of birth and death and all of that stuff?
Right.
Who decides that?
Okay,
it's like, you know, it can't be me. I wouldn't want this.
Right. Okay. First of all, that's a really good handle, 2012, because let's just remember that 2012 really did happen. So well done for taking that handle, because it's like we've gone past it now and people may be thinking, well, why'd you call yourself 2012? Excellent. Well done. Right. It totally depends on the lineage of that person's soul and who are the key influences behind it. Now, your key influences are yourself, thank goodness, divine source, and just about every Tom, Dick and Harry out there who has a hand in the pot. Most of them are evil, because good souls don't usually start getting involved unless they're trying to balance the field. So you are going to incarnate in a family either because Source has worked with you and this is a family you're going to be protected by, or something bad is going to happen and you're going to learn from it, or the bad guy has got to you and they put you into a body that you were not planning to go to. They put you into a family that you weren't expecting because they wanted to control your physical body, usually through abuse or through pain, because they 99.9% of the time can't control your soul, but they can limit the controls of you by controlling your body. So without lots of information to question and answer session, I couldn't give you the answer. I could if I had the chance to talk to the person, but based on what we've been told, you've got Source that has a handle in it, you have yourself, and then you have outside influences, be they good or bad. Okay, what was the next part of the question?
Okay, so that's so now we're talking about the freeze box.
Yep.
And how can people escape the freeze box? And this one is like, how is it that you, Simon, have the ability to return with all your memories? And how do you escape the freeze box? Or how did you escape the freeze box? Or did you have a private portal back?
What's happened is that from a very early age, 2, 3, I had partial memories. So in 1963, I was very little. In 1963, I had an experience with a shadow being. And I have remembered that always because it was pretty damn traumatic. It didn't hurt me, but the shock of seeing something walk through a wall when you're sort of 3.5 years old is pretty frightening. And there are many other bits of memory that I have had. Now, that's first of all memory in this life, and I have a very, very good memory. In terms of memories from previous lives, yes, I have some, not fully played out, but I have some memories that I've had from very, very early age, particularly in my interest in collecting fossils, and I'm not going to go on that road now, but I know that I have incarnated in other people's bodies back in history. I don't know all of them, but I know some of them. When I reached around about my 50th birthday, it was clearly a clock, a timed vault that opened, and I got a lot more memories. Now, some of the memories I got expanded the original memories I'd had from the age of 4 or 5. What I thought that I had was like the full memory, suddenly realized that I only had a portion. There was a lot more to it. So I've been very fortunate that somebody had given me the ability to have a pretty damn good recall on this life and on a previous life. Now, I would have done the freeze box. You know, I'm not any different from anyone else. I've done the freeze box, but somebody probably got in there and hacked something so that it wasn't fully effective, or some loop was put in that allowed something on a branch line, for want of a better word, that was saved like a memory stick. And then when I got to a certain age, someone, it was almost like energetically, the energy stick was plugged in, and that helped to flesh out the thinner memories that I had. So that I hope answers that question. What were the other ones?
All right. So basically, they want to return with their memories and are asking, will daily and nightly intentions help me to do this?
Well, it depends what intentions are. If someone's sitting there saying, I intend to get my memories back, that won't do it in itself, no, because whilst having an intent is you expressing what you want, you have to have worked towards it. You know, it's like somebody who, somebody says to me, I want this to happen. I said, yes, but why do you want it to happen? Have you understood why you want it to happen? And when it happens, what will you do with it? Now, if you don't really understand why you want it other than I want it, and if you don't really know what you're going to do with it, well, then you probably won't be given it. Because you have to prepare the ground. You have to do the work so that when it arrives, you use it as a learning tool. So I think that my best advice is to do whatever form of meditation you can and try to come to terms with why it's important to you to have that memory, how you will use it, and how you'll be a better person when you've got that. Now, if you can square that, then I think some of that memory will come back. I hope that helps.
Yes, now. Okay, that was Saria. Saria is also a musician. And if you want to send me an email with a link, a download link, I'm JP at wallspiritradio.com. So JP, the letters JP. And hang on a second. And we, so JP at wallspiritradio.com. That's how you send things to me. And it comes into my email. So thank you very much. I look forward to it. As I was playing a lot of music from listeners and some of my old band and some of the CC group played before this show in the hour before that. So you have been entertained by very highly conscious people. So, all right, okay, that's done that one. Right, okay, all right. This is... Okay, so this is a question that a lot of people... this is from Lightweaver. Love it to JP and Simon. Parenthesized. I was told years back I had a fierce attachment. F-E-R-S-E. Fears? Fears. There was actually a troubled past life stream of mine. Was told to cast her out with visceral prejudice. As I hadn't learned to be in my body till mid-30s, PTSD related, I thought. I felt she was trying in her own way to keep me from the torture she, as a witch, endured and feared to leave, i.e. earth judgment. Talked her out of God fear into the light I believed. So I'm better these days, still working on being in body and lesser anger issues and other PTSDs. She's asking you for any suggestions that you might have or any insights that you might have had while I read the story.
Right. Yes, not what you're expecting. You can't throw something out of your body. I may have misunderstood this, but I got the impression that she was very angry and threw this thing out or tried to throw it out with anger. Have I correctly understood that?
Yes, I think so. And was very okay. Fearful. Yeah.
That's not going to work. That is not going to work. You cannot generally remove something successfully if you are angry at it. You have to be incredibly controlled and you have to be all encompassing. Sounds pretentious. I'm sorry. You have to have a full understanding of what the creature is, why you don't want it. And you have to understand that the creature is actually less than you. And is probably just a child in its understanding itself and, is of a lower vibrational rate than you. It must be because otherwise it wouldn't attach to you like that. So you will struggle to remove anything if you come at it from that mindset. Now, I understand that you've asked me what insights I have. I understand that your brain is wired differently. I can tell you that. You already know this. And the way you think is different from everyone else. And it's both a blessing and it's a bit of a difficult thing for you because you have the ability to think very quickly and know answers, but you behave in a way that other people find very difficult. So that's the person you are. Yes, I have lots of insights for you. You're going to have a chat with me, aren't you? So send me an email.
Email address, please.
Oh, right, okay. Simon, S-I-M-O-N, dot Parkes, P-A-R-K-E-S, 3, at btopenworld.com.
Okie doke. Thank you very much. BT Open World. Oh, yes. Love them. Okay. So, dear Simon, not being funny, but sometimes when you lose, e.g. your glasses, have you really lost them or are you being played with? sometimes. I swear I lose something, and then later on it is where I looked, right in plain sight. But it really wasn't there earlier. Are these occurrences examples of parallel realities, naughty entities, or just a loss of focus on my part? Please explain. Thank you kindly, from Helen. Yes, I think a lot of people are experiencing this.
Okay, well, she said not to be funny. No, it's not funny. It's very serious. And I like the pun there. I don't know if that was intended. Loss of focus. And you were talking about glasses. So I don't know if that was meant as a joke. I like that. Very good. Look, we can all be absent-minded. I mean, I can put down a pen on a table and swear blind that I don't know where it is, and then I find it on the table. But if it happens many times in different objects, different things, and if you go back and you check that location and it really isn't there, and then you go back half an hour later or a day later and suddenly it is there, then that's not double reality. That's an entity playing with you. Okay. Now, if you, when I get a client with that, the first thing I check for is a poltergeist. And if I can scrub the poltergeist as a potential source here, then I'm left with either a djinn or another form of the demonic race, or what we might tentatively call a pixie or an elf, one of the very elemental creatures. Not for no reason did the old Victorians have the old tooth fairy who would come and take a child's tooth it was put under the pillow. I'll give you an example of something that happened to me that's unusual. And it'd be a bit of a fun story. This is, goodness knows, this must be about, five years ago. I had a glass ornament. I don't know if they do it around the world, but in Britain there's quite a tradition for people to use a device to blow down to make things in glass. And we call them the glass animal man or glass animal woman. They can create birds or deer or cats, what have you, with glass, and do anything with glass. That's how marbles were originally made in Germany. So I had this glass ornament of a bird, and you know, I've got a house full of lots of cats, and it didn't last very long before it was knocked off and it smashed. So it was very beautiful, and I put it into a box, a crate, with the good intention of gluing it. And 5 years later, I thought, I'm not going to get around to glue this. I just don't have the time. I'm going to throw it away. So I absolutely categorically threw all of it into the bin in the kitchen, tied up the refuse sack, trash sack, took it out, stuck it in the trash can, wheelie bin, off it went. Now then, 5 years later, I went out to the bird table of an evening to put birdseed down to feed the birds, because I like to do that, and there was a piece of this glass model on the bird table. Now, what has smashed was this glass ornament that I had was two birds together, and what was on the bird table was a wing. Now, I know what the connection is there. This is a bird table. This is where you know, you feed the birds, and here is a glass bird wing. Interestingly enough, the wing was very dirty, as if it had been in the mud. And a number of other people have recounted stories where things have been lost like that and have also appeared to be dirty, as if the earth has taken them. So that is something that's at play. And, you know, when is it just by chance, when you've knocked it by accident, or when is it something different? And a good example would be a friend of mine who saw a set of keys that they'd lost, so them suddenly materialize maybe 3 feet above the ground and then just fall on the floor. So it's come through from a portal. Things disappearing and coming back are far more common than you would imagine. Sometimes it's a game, it's a play. Sometimes it's to send you a message. For goodness sake, wake up. You know, this is what's going on. This is the reality. Sometimes it's just, you know, fun, just being cheeky. So there you go. It's serious when you are on medication. You know, some people do obviously have to take medication, and then that medication disappears. I had 3 pieces of Moldavite all disappear. I had 1 piece of Moldavite that went, 2nd that went, 3rd that went, and in the end I had to get somebody to buy me the Moldavite because then it had someone else's intention on it, and that hasn't been taken. So things do go, yes. If it becomes difficult, then you're going to have to start protecting them by placing them in sort of protective environments. I don't mean a safe and energy protection. Anyway, that was good. Thank you.
Okay, so from that to shoes. What is the ritual stroke demonic stroke satanic meaning of the shoes of the victims after the terror attacks? Is that some sort of signature?
Well, who's put that question in, please?
Ich Benadi. No.
Hang on. Can you just spell the name for me, please?
IKBENA.
So, I can't go that far.
Sorry.
No, I've got to.
IK.
IK.
BEN.
BEN.
ADDY. Some sort of.
Right.
Okay. the date and time of the message was 11:33. So I don't know. If you want another clue for your alchemy, can't get
in there. Right. Well, obviously the audience are thinking, what's going on here?
What's your hello, hello, hello?
Right. At the very beginning of the show, I talked about a terror attack, and I said that, certain things were hidden in videos to tell you where the next attack was going to be, and that's always the case. And you, if you have the knowledge, you can identify it. It's easy to identify. What's damn difficult is to know what it's saying to you, because people might say, oh, look, you know, the clock was saying a certain time, or an aeroplane flew overhead and it had this symbol on it. So, you know, from that, they can probably work out something. But to actually know where that attack's going to be, that's the hard work. This person is absolutely right. The clue is in the shoes. Spot on.
Bingo.
I'm not going to say anymore. Absolutely spot on. The clue is in the shoes. So you are right. Well, there are several clues, but the shoes in relation to the person and in relation to the pavement and in the relation to the town are absolute clues. So the person here is either a member of the intelligence network. The person here is either very magical or very gifted. Well, the person here has done some very interesting research and has come up with something. But either way, you're absolutely spot on. Thank you. Ich bin Adi. So it sounds Muslim, but it might not be, because Ike could be Ike without the E, Ben as in Big Ben, and Adi as Ad. So I like that name. I think that's interesting, and I like your question. Thank you.
Very interesting, because there was this other thing about shoes, wasn't there? I still see that picture of the repeated thing of George Bush ducking two thrown shoes brilliantly. You know, he's really, really good at ducking. Those would have hit me smack in the face.
Well, he spent all his life ducking and diving.
So, here from Stefan, I think. Evolution of Souls. Dear Simon, dear JP, thank you for your great work. You have become an anchor for me. My question, as I understand, a soul has special origin like reptilian, mantid, pleiadian, etc., and can choose to have a life experience in another race's vessel. Will this change or expand the soul's repertoire? Would reptilians, for instance, get compassion after a life as a human? Thinking this to the end, we would all finally integrate all traits of all races and become complete.
Hallelujah. You're absolutely right. That's really what it's about. It's about learning what it is about the other person that we don't like, and then accepting them and not letting them affect us and upset us, because we have to accept that they're different and that the way they are doesn't really impact on us. It's just the way they are. And the best way to do that is to incarnate in the same body. So 50% reptilian and a 50% Palladian sharing the same body would be hell. However, if both sides have made an agreement to try to understand each other and work together, And if that works, then there's absolutely no reason why in the individual states outside of the third dimension, these beings can't learn. Now, if we understand that we're connected to source and we have an energetic connection to other dimensions, we are teaching others. We are teaching them because we are experiencing here on Earth, and those experiences are being passed up. So every time we do a good deed, we push the pointer on the needle towards the light. I'm being fairly, simplistic about this, but that's the best way to describe it. And every time we do something that ain't so good, the needle goes back towards the dark side. And so we are factories. And I have described it like the human body is like a paint factory. You know, we're mixing different colors to try to get this new color that nobody has ever seen before, this new fifth dimensional color, which will allow the human race to advance quickly through the fourth, skip through the fourth, get into the fifth, and survive. But we can't do it if we're still kicking each other and not accepting each other. So this is the best way. The best way is to confront our own prejudices and accept them. And, you know, think about the liar and trauma, JP. It's no good unless you're actually learning from it and changing from it. So, you know, that's what it's all about. So you're absolutely spot on. You're absolutely right. That is what it's all about in terms of the human race's development and other races' development. Because if we can, down on this humble planet, beautiful but humble planet, if we can unlock the key to true forgiveness and love, then we set a number of other races free. Other races perhaps, potentially, who have been at war with each other for millions of years. If we can actually live together in harmony, then why aren't they? So there's a lot on the shoulders of the human race here. It's not just paying the mortgage, bringing up the children, and then having a little bit of time to watch the comedy show on television before you go to bed and start the day all over again. But it's this bit that's unseen. It's about trying to develop something. We're special anyway. The human race is special, but it's not at its potential. It's not there yet. And so if we can only work together in many ways, multidimensionally ways, we have a fantastic chance of setting lots of other people free. And I think a long time ago, it was foreseen that the human race had the compassion, the capability of doing this, but the compassion, and that this might actually bring a real big beneficial blast to the multiverse. The fly in the ointment is the negative artificial intelligence, which does not want that. It wants to reduce everything to a robotic state. So our battle is with people who push AI or the transhuman agenda or anything that's robotic. I mean, I, to this day, if I go into a bank, I will always go up to the girl or the boy behind the cash desk rather than use a machine if the bank's open, because I am keeping that person in a job. The more people that use the cash machine when they could have gone to the teller, that's why banks reduce people. And so it's little things like that we have to always bear in mind. Anyway, thank you. Good question.
More fascinating. Wow, now, from today to... Why did my mic cut out? From today to the far distant past. Medusa and the Minoan Double Axe. Dear Simon, I would like to ask you, what is the true story of Medusa and the double axe that we see it's prevalent at the Minoan civilization? Thank you. From Denise.
Originally, the axe had two faces on it, and it has a direct lineage through to some countries. I think Poland is one of them, or is it Austria, where you have the double-headed eagle, and the head is facing away. And this is one of the sons of Anu, this is the symbol of one of the sons of Anu. The Medusa is merely a play on serpents. There wasn't really a character in the flesh and blood that had snakes growing out of her head. However, and there were real flesh and blood characters that looked very, very snake-like. And you would, if you were not a witch, but you had feminine energy and you were of that race, you would be able to play upon your snakish energy, and you would be in a cult, and therefore you would be separate from the rest, and you would be this big sort of story that would build up around you and the people around you. So the truth about Medusa is not a real person with lots of snakes coming out of her hair. It is a play on a very real reptilian-y. So there are a number of reptilians whose faces are much more snake-like. Most of the drawings that we see on the net, and indeed the one that I did, is a much more square-muzzled type of face. But that's the one I drew. That's because that's what I've seen. But other people see them where they are much more, the face comes out much more. And I talk about the Conan the Barbarian film with Arnold Schwarzenegger, and before digital technology was available to the civilian side, and they have to use a rubber model to make Falsidoom's face go out. But that actually is accurate for some forms of reptilian. So if you look at that film, you would understand why the Medusa has come about. So the double axe originally had two faces on it, and it represents the two sons, and then it became known as the One Sun, really. So all of these, what are now quite ancient traditions, remember, were pre-Christianity, where the gods were, in those days, the ruling elite, who had special gifts, or more likely had been given special responsibilities. So the god of the air, the god of the earth, you're in charge of the water, you're in charge of the landing places, you're in charge of communications. You know, think about the god Mercury, who is depicted as like Hermes with the winged feet. Well, he was the god of communication, wasn't he? So maybe he was in charge of the superluminal communication hub somewhere on the planet. All of these gods are names and abilities given to what I believe to be at that time were real flesh and blood creatures who were hardly ever seen by the public, for want of a better word, but their story was well known. So it's a good question. Thank you.
Right. Last question from Rosario in Argentina. Now, I hope you're doing well. I would like to ask you a question about reptilians. Many researchers like yourself and Alex Collier have indicated that reptilians consume human flesh. Yeah, and indeed human's flesh, and I don't know how to pronounce that, spell that, and drink human blood too. So consume human flesh and drink human blood too. Being the great majority of the human race is poisoned by pesticides like Monsanto's Roundup, wouldn't that be detrimental to the reptilians' well-being? Would they not prefer to eat the equivalent of our organic food? Or would it be more convenient for the reptilians themselves to be against the poisoning of the human race as part of a healthy diet for their own good? Peace and love to you and JP. So, good question. Final question from Rosario.
Well, I'm glad we've ended on a humorous note. First of all, I'm not a researcher. I've never claimed to be a researcher. I don't research. The only time I do anything like that is when I've got a conference coming up. Excuse me. And then I've got my blurb I'm ready to deliver, and I go and see, well, what, is there any photographs to back up what I'm saying? Is there any pictures, anything that can, you know, make my talk more interesting? So I research that, but I don't actually research anything else. Right. Amongst the humorous question, there's a good point there. If you were to consume adults who'd been chomping away on animals that have got lots of, you know, antibiotics in them for God knows how long, wouldn't that affect you? You're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. That's why they prefer children. Drinking blood? Actually, no. Reptilians don't drink blood. Anunnaki do. So those creatures that are physically half human, half reptilian, they do drink blood, and they require that as part of the process for sustaining their life on Earth. That's not to be confused with a satanic ritual where they drink blood. That is for another purpose. I won't go down that road because we don't want to end on a dark note. I choose to end on a light note. So, yes, they are very, 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 very particular. So though your question was humorous, it actually has some truthful elements to it, and I hope I've answered them. Thank you.
So, Simon, any final thoughts or benedictions?
Yes. I have talked that this time is like the eye of the storm. It seems publicly to be quiet. It isn't. I promise you, it's not quiet. There's a great deal going on, and so many people who listen to this show are, you know, very, very spiritual. I just think everyone that listens to this actually is spiritual, and but, you know, people are on different wavelengths of development. Somebody could listen to this show who's just picked it up and woken up a week ago. Somebody might be 20 years. So we're all at different levels. But they will feel that at the moment it's calm, but there's something building. I still think there are some crazy people who would like something to take the human mind off something else. I still think that they would like to cause some form of disaster simply to deflect attention away from something else. Finally then, because we've got a minute left, Divine Source has the capability to destroy AI, and it would do that via a massive solar coronal ejection. So a massive burst of solar radiation from the sun would fry artificial intelligence. Unfortunately, it would take out every power grid on the planet. It would knock out everyone's personal computer, and it would plunge us back to the 1950s temporarily. And but it would destroy AI. And I was chatting to my very good friend today, and we talked about the Matrix film. And when Neo, no, it's not Neo, they're in the submarine, the Nebuchadnezzar, and they're attacked by these sort of electronic octopus, which is obviously
squiddies. AI. It's the squiddies.
That's Squiddykins. Yeah, that's the one. And Morpheus, the captain of the Nebuchadnezzar, orders an EMP charge, and it knocks them all out. There's so much information in The Matrix. And the other thing is, if you think that Agent Smith is black goo, alright, if you imagine that Agent Smith is black goo, and every time Agent Smith put his hand into somebody, they replicated. So imagine he was the alien black goo trying to overwrite the system and try to turn everything its way. So there's a lot. Maybe we'll have a chat about that next time and go on. But yes, so I hope that's a good answer for people. Thank you.
Excellent. So, Simon, that's it for another fortnight. I hope to see you in another 2 weeks.
So do I. I tend to be here.
And, have fun at your conferences. And, sometime soon. When I say soon, I'm using the soon in the way that the people's spirit guides say soon. I am going to go on the road with a PA system and a conference thing, and, you know, I'm going to pick you up on the way. We're going to do something, yeah?
Well, as long as I'm available, yes.
Of course, yeah. I'll tell you beforehand. I'll give you enough warning. All right. Thank you very much, Simon Parks. This is Wolf Spirit Radio. Stay tuned for Simon Says.